Put it back together, we can begin. Part two, public input on the draft for the BART citizen oversight model. All right. Mr. Johnson, you're the first speaker. The mic is right there, and 3 minutes. Thank you.
Before my time starts, I'd like to know the ground. So if I ask the question and they take 3 minutes to answer, my time is up?
Well, this is what I think we're trying to do. In the interest of being everybody be able to speak, I think we have general agreement that they will listen to everybody's feedback and take it down and then respond at the end. Because if we do that, then somebody could take 10 minutes. So I don't know if they're going to respond to every question that's answered. I think we want to hear everybody's feedback. Somebody is making notes, and then they'll answer at the end.
And one other ground rule, too. Also have my sister, she hasn't made it. Both my sisters haven't made it, and my brother. So if I have to, I'll take their time.
Sir, I'll let you speak for 3 minutes. If they can, I'll let them speak. They can fill out a form when they speak. I filled out a form too. I would prefer not. I'd like to have one person speak for 3 minutes. You can speak, but I prefer not to.
To be honest, I believe my time is going to go much longer than 3 minutes. Right. So I may need to sit down
looking
now, and let a few other people go first.
If you feel I'm really trying to hold to the time of 3 minutes, so I can get everybody to speak, and that I'm really going to try and adhere to that.
I'd say if you'd like to wait for your family members, then why don't we hear from the other speakers, and we'll just we'll take you next. If they don't show up, we'll figure it out.
Yes, sir. So should we hold for the, and we'll let the family speak at a certain time? All right, thank you.
Let's get together.
That would be Charmaine, Daryl, Fonda, and yourself? Okay, we'll do it that way. Thank you. Mr. Regan? You're part of the family also? Next is Lee Sherman.
My name is Leah Sherman. I'm the Socialist Workers Party candidate for city attorney in San Francisco. I'm proud to join the supporters who are fighting for justice for Oscar Grant. This means convicting and jailing Johannes Messerly, the killer cop. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of working people throughout the world have seen the video that shows the brutality of this 22-year-old black worker being shot in the back. And as was said earlier by Reverend Buford, this is the result of this hearing today, of the protests and pressures. And that's why we're here today. The facts are clear. You just watch the video. Oscar Grant's killing demonstrates that cops feel free to act as judge, jury, and executioner of working people, especially black, Latino, and Asian. And it's not a mistake. It's not bad training. Oscar Grant joins a long list of others killed by the police, to just name a few: Jerry Amaro, Sean Bell, Gary King, Amadou Diallo, and the list goes on and on and on. The role of the police is to protect the property and state power of the tiny ruling class billionaire families. What they do is they intimidate working people by state-sanctioned brutality and arbitrary slaves. They want to shut us up. They want to keep us down. And they'll be used more and more today as we working people face an increasingly devastating crisis of capitalism. Nothing like this have we seen in our memory. We're losing jobs in big numbers. In the United States, over 3 million jobs were cut just last year. Unemployment benefits don't fill the gap. Attacks on our pensions, retirement, our social wage, and at the same time expanding wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. And this will continue, and this will make for resistance. As we join together to fight for adequate unemployment, for a jobs program, for health care, and others. I just want to end by saying that the importance of conviction and jailing of Johannes Messerly is what is needed at this time. And I think everyone from the police, civilian, let me just finish my sentence, the civilian review board must press for that conviction. That is the only thing that will give it any reason to be here.
Thank you very much. Tony Coleman?
I allot my time to the Oscar Grant family.
Dana Blanchard?
Can I also allot my time, or are we allowed to do that? I guess is my question.
You can speak if you
okay,
I'm going to say something.
I'm going to go ahead and say something, because I really want to ask this question. I want to know what the bar board has to say, which is, if this model were in place the night that Oscar Grant was murdered, what would have been done differently? Because I don't see anything in here that says anything about how things would have been handled differently. And to me, that's the burning question. That's why we're all here. I see a document that has no teeth. I see a document that has no funding, no real accountability, no policy change. And those are the things that I think the community is saying that need to happen. I feel like we're not being listened to. It's very frustrating. I feel like even the way this discussion is being handled with the timer is offensive to me. The fact that family members don't get longer to speak when they've taken the time out to come and speak and present a very personal matter and try to present to you their thoughts, I think is very offensive. You know, there's a lot of things to comment on in here that I think are a problem. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's no real accountability in here. There's no real policy change. And frankly, this idea of community outreach, we're the community, we're outreaching, we're telling you what we think. I feel like we're not being listened to. And I think that you guys need to start listening to us, and there needs to be some real accountability in here. And I would like to hear an answer to that question, which is, what would have been handled differently? Because Officer Messerly resigned. I don't see anything in here about how to handle that when officers resign. I don't see anything in here that would have meant that Tony Peroni would face any consequences, which to me, those are the burning questions right now, which is, the behavior of the other officers on the platform that night. I mean, this part in here that talks about the auditor shall be immediately informed of all critical on-duty officer involved incidents. What would that look like? Would that mean that Tony Peroni would be facing charges now, that it would have been handled differently? I don't see anything in here that says that, and I would like to hear from you how things would have been handled differently if this model were in place on January 1st of this year.
Thank you. Pat Foley?
Oh, I don't hear him.
Can I hear him?
Well, that was my first question, too, that we would like answered tonight. How would the existence of this being in place have made a difference to Oscar Grant and his family? Also, I would like to know if the auditor is a funded position. I'd like to know of Part J in the auditor section. There's two J's, but I'm talking about the auditor section. Part J, it says the BART police chief will be responsible for providing the same information to and cooperating with the auditor. We can't even get the police chief here to these meetings, or what? What's going to happen if he doesn't cooperate? What teeth is there for that? Again, I'll reiterate what Dana said about H, under the auditor, Part H. The auditor shall be immediately informed of all critical on-duty officers involved incident or death or seriously bodily injuries result. I think it's a little late for that. Let's know, are we going to wait for another death? I think if you're going to be looking at rogue cops, you should be looking a little bit sooner than after they kill somebody or beat the crap out of them. Another question I have is, can officers refuse to answer these questions posed by the auditor? I think that's true, that it has no teeth. And it's just wrong. That's wrong.
Thank you very much. Paula Simon.
Well, I'm going to concede my time to the family.
Mr. Muhammad, you were a member of the committee. You really didn't have to get informed, but thank you, sir.
I think that some of our colleagues here in the public have pointed out something that we all would have concern. First, what is the strength of the citizen and the Citizen Review Commission? As has been stated in some other dialogue, the auditor's position is defined very clearly. I don't think that you have a civilian review process if the civilians are not reviewing the complaints directly. So not that the auditor, the paid staff or the BART, receives all the complaints and reports to the Citizens Review Committee. The Citizens Review Committee needs to hear the complaints of the public. As we were sitting here, I'm not a member of the committee, but I received a citizen complaint about BART brutality while sitting here tonight. So it happens that quickly, and I don't entrust that a system that certainly wants to protect its own financial interests is in its hiring of an auditor, that auditor also needs to really, there has to be a relationship with the citizenship, where the citizens have some role in the selection process of who the auditor will be and monitor the auditor. Because once the auditor comes under $300,000, $400,000 a year, whatever that is, I don't know, $200,000 a year salary, the question becomes, who does the auditor work for? Does the auditor work for the BART system, or does the auditor work to protect the citizenship? So whatever the Citizen Review Commission is, it should receive direct complaint. And whatever that has to be done in order to swear in, whatever you do to make sure that those are responsible about whatever complaints are with personnel, then do that. But we should make sure we spell out that the Citizens Review is actually reviewing actual complainants and are involved in the process in some fashion of investigation of what's happening with law enforcement when they go wrong. So there should be a citizen investigative role. There should be a citizen direct contact with the review board process, so that persons don't feel like the only ones I have engaged are BART employees who may circle the wagons around BART. We want to have the access to the information that the auditor would receive. If we use that type of a model, there should be a citizen at the table with the auditor. Finally, we need to have teeth over this thing called recommendations to the chief. To me, the citizens review and auditor process must have greater strength than recommendation. If an officer has done wrong, that wrong has been sustained by the review process, you may need to even spell out what are the punishments for the various matters that have come before, so we know that when the chief receives this complaint and the review board and the auditor have sustained that wrongdoing has occurred, that this officer will be suspended, this officer will be terminated, this officer will be without pay.
Unfortunately, since you are in public comment, you are subject to the same 3-minute time limitation as everyone else.
I got it. But in conclusion, I think I made my point, is that if it's going to be citizens review, give the citizens the power to discipline above.
Thank you. Mr. Beatrice? Pardon? No, all right.
Who said that?
Okay, that's Wanda. Yeah. Troy, is that you, Troy? Oh, I'm sorry, bro.
I can see my time to bring things up.
Shelton, the Shelton Marks? Not here? All right. Diane Marks?
I'm part of the family, so I'm going to wait.
Cameron Sturtevant?
With all due respect to the family, because I would have conceded my time as well, but I want to say a few things to you, so with your permission. First of all, there are 7 lethally armed officers in this room tonight. There were 2 lethally armed officers at the door when we walked in. And I think that means there's 1 cop for every 5 people in this room tonight. And that for a body that has been called together to talk about out of control police behavior, that gives you some idea, I think, of the basis for the very foundation of the work that this committee is so-called trying to accomplish. I think you set a real strong tone right there with all these guns around us right here. Further, I just want to say, you know, there's a lot of word acrobatics in here. And second of all, it's a very common tactic to bury the opposition under paperwork. So here we are. The photocopiers have been hard at work putting out the paper for us to complicate what is a very simple problem. Because what I want to know is that, you know, when we are looking at what happened on the bar platform that night, I want a civilian control of the police board is what I want out of this. So how would that have worked on this situation? I want all the officers on that platform, at least under discipline, most of them fired. And that already without waiting for 5 months for that to happen. At every point where the word investigation is used in your paper avalanche here, I want that explicitly changed to say the police officer will be investigated, not saying, oh, we're going to investigate everybody, and that means you come to my house and harass me, my friends, my family, my neighbors, sending out your process servers, which is what's happening in the Grant family case right now. And that the final thing is that I want to know that when a police officer signs up for duty, that they, as a condition of their employment, say, I will not retire and I will not resign if I am facing disciplinary charges. And that if I am found guilty of those disciplinary charges as a condition of employment, I surrender my benefits, my retirement benefits, and every other benefit that they have.
Thank you very much, sir. David is the only name I have here. Yes, sir.
Hi. I've missed a couple meetings. I've been out of town a little bit, and I come back and I'm just really kind of shocked and disappointed by this document. The first thing that screams out at me is independent police auditor. That's one of the absolute weakest models you can have. I don't think it's accurate to even call this a police citizens oversight. That's a misnomer. It's really just an auditor. The citizens, it sounds like here, are pretty much just a welcome wagon, just to recommend strategies to improve community relations, to conduct community outreach. There's basically nothing that they do except file, a couple of reports. I don't see any language in here about the Auditor Advisory Board making recommendations for discipline. It says there's supposed to be investigations, but there's nothing about recommendations here. So basically, they could just be talking to the wind. What is the police accountability to the auditor? I don't see anything in there that says anything about that. It doesn't sound much different than what's going on now, where you file a police report and or a complaint report, and who knows where it goes. What is the criteria going to be for appointing the auditor and the advisory board? I think that needs to be spelled out very clearly. And lastly, I just want to note that the annual reporting is not enough. If you go with this really weak model here, it shouldn't be called citizen oversight. There shouldn't even be the word citizen in it. But if you do go with that, we need quarterly reporting, because otherwise, what's the point? You know, somebody shoots somebody on January 1st, and the public doesn't find out about it until the next January 1st. You know, and then we're back in the same boat again, where the citizens have to rise up and say, oh, we read this report, and now we're upset, and now, please, something happened. it's just weak. It's very disappointing.
Thank you, sir. Sharon Kidd? No, good name. Excuse me.
Good evening. My name is Sharon Kidd, and I'm on the Berkeley Police Review Board. And I was looking over your draft, and I had a couple of questions myself and Commissioner Whitehead. You have no indication of a hearing process. How are you going to conduct the hearings? How many citizens are going to serve on that hearing panel? In Berkeley, we have 3 commissioners per hearing. Disciplinary action is... We don't do disciplinary action, but we recommend certain aspects after the case to the city manager and the chief, and then they make disciplinary action. We just had a big case in Berkeley, an officer-involved shooting, which I worked on that panel. And I have to say to the community, sometimes you really have to sit and listen to both sides of the story before you draw a conclusion. And our case... We did draw a positive conclusion because we had all of the facts at hand. We had the evidence, we had pictures, we had the investigative reporting. So that might be something you want to take in consideration. Also, I would like to suggest that because BART runs through different counties, that you have members from each county sit on that board and represent that specific area, not everybody from Oakland or Berkeley or whatever the case may be. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. White, also from the
Good evening. As I went through this proposal, I was quite disappointed, very, very disappointed that you're choosing to go with the police auditor's model. Again, my name is William White. I've been on the Berkeley Police Review Commission for over 10 years now. And so I have had the opportunity to see how other models work and know directors of other agencies and know how the trials and tribulations they go through. And I know specifically the auditor model is the most pressurized model there is from the top down in terms of conducting their position. For example, if you look at what has happened in San Jose, we all know that San Jose has had a lot of upheaval in the police department based on shootings. Well, the auditor of San Jose came from Berkeley and went to San Jose and became very outspoken in terms of what was happening in the police department down there. She came under a lot of pressure, like most auditors do, and she has resigned. And unfortunately, this is the same type of situation that will happen if you go into this, use this particular model. There is no independence, there is no strength, there is nothing behind the director or the person who would be in charge of civilian oversight. Then when you look at the actual citizen oversight, there's nothing here. I mean, it's just, you're going to a meeting and you're going to look at papers and that's it. You won't even see any complaints. You won't even know what the facts are in any complaints. It's at least what I'm looking here, or what I'm looking through here within this model. And finally, you refer to both NACO and Noble as your authority. Institutional authority. Well, the fact is that, you know, the National Association of Civilian Oversight and even the local civilian oversight, these bodies, they do meet, but they have really no influence in terms of what goes on in terms at the local level. So basically, they have no teeth in terms of pushing agendas or making things happen. It's just a gathering of people, exchanging ideas, and that's it. We go away, and it's all over. This is, in conclusion, this is not the right way to go. This is not the right way to go. The auditor's position, it will be a compromised position, and the civilian oversight component does have, okay, I'm sorry. The civilian oversight component has no duties. Okay, I'm sorry. That's it.
Thank you very much. Oscar Wright.
My name is Oscar Wright, and I'm in Concord. I've been a citizen here for 53 years. I remember when they didn't have any black police here. And when they did have black police, then they weren't able to arrest white people. Later on, I remember back when Mayor Wilson was mayor, two Oakland policemen killed 13 black men in 9 months. The records show that it's 9. And they killed this little boy, Melvin Black, on 53rd and Martin Luther King. I went to the coroner's office, got a copy of the coroner's report, and they found that that little kid had been shot 17 times, 13 times in the back. Fire department was sent out to wash away the evidence, but they didn't know that 357 mag knocked brains out of little kid's head 17 feet up the wall. I'm the one that recommended John Doris do the investigation of that case. I've served on the police review board at that time, task force for Mayor Wilson, and I submitted a proposal representing the NAACP at that time for a police review board that had subpoena powers and everything else. They finally watered it down to what you see now is what they call the Citizen Complaint Board, which simply means nothing but an ombudsman.
Go ahead.
I would like to say, in closing, the time for justice is now coming. And I believe that no force can hold it back. In the eyes of God and man, it is right that it should come. And when it does, it will brighten the lives of every American. I want y'all to do the thing that's right this time. Make it right.
Shane, I believe is the name I have here. I see my time in the family. Jack Bryson. That other than the family speakers, then there is there anyone else who wants to speak with regard to the proposal that you've heard tonight?
Yes, sir. Someone speak now?
Go right ahead, sir. Just identify yourself, because I don't have anything to identify. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
Jonathan Ford, and with all respect due to the Grant family. Oscar Grant. I was invited here by the Berkeley Police Review Commission, and what happened was I was supposed to actually sit on some type of panel, but I guess y'all changed the structure of the meeting. And basically, my experience is that I lived in Berkeley for 2 years, and during my stay at Berkeley, I had several incidents with the Berkeley Police Department. I filed complaints, so I went through the actual review commission process, and one of my allegations actually got sustained, where an officer, they pulled me out of my car, I'm away from school, they pulled me over because they said I didn't have tags, and they pulled me out of the car, and choked me, all kind of stuff, detained me in the backseat, and then they finally let me go and wrote me a ticket and told me they apologized. So, and that allegation got sustained for excessive force. And the thing was that the allegation didn't really go nowhere because the Berkeley Police Department had a lawsuit against the city of Berkeley in regards to the hearings. So I guess it was a right to privacy was violated. And they threw all the complaints out that were from the time up until the lawsuit finally went in. All the complaints were just now void. And that was shocking to me. And if I'm wrong, correct me, please. And my thing is that, unfortunately, I never had any incidents with Berkeley Police, I mean, with BART Police. But my little brother is autistic, and he's had several incidents with the police, and they always, as the paper was saying, profile him and assume he's up to something because he's quiet, his demeanor is, you know, he's autistic. So, and I never really knew the BART Police had a process to file complaints. I would have been filed one based on that. And now that I see that they do have a process, it just reminds me of the whole incident with Berkeley, where it looks like it goes up this big ladder to nowhere. And my thing is, and please inform me if I'm ignorant, I don't really know as a citizen my relationship to the BART Police. I mean, are the BART Police actually police officers, or are they who grants them authority, or are they granted authority through BART, which is, and is BART even, and is BART a public, or is this private? I mean, because I don't know. I'm just asking, just for the knowledge. Is this a private or a public entity? Public? So
we're a public agency created by the state. We have an elected board of directors, who are us.
Uh-huh.
And then the police department for BART, they are full sworn police officers, and they work for BART police chief, who uh-huh. works for BART's general manager. Who works for the BART board. So, yes, so it is a police force like any other police force, and it is a public agency.
And my thing is, besides being accountable to the BART police commissioner and the BART board, I would like to know, is there a process to go to our actual city officials, or actual state government officials, you know, there need be even some type of federal intervention, but how is that? Because I can tell you from experience with the Police Review Commission that the, what they call them, they get to make the auditor makes a recommendation. That was, I never really knew what happened to the officer that actually assaulted me. And
sir, even with the response from the director, you are over the 3 minutes. If you could ask your questions, they can write them down and try and respond to them if they so choose during the next part.
That was just my question.
Well, it's an excellent question. I just want you to be able to.
Okay. Oh, besides going to the BART police commissioner and the board, is there any other way we can, get assistance from our state actual officials we actually, vote into office and elect into office? That's it.
Thank you. Before the family, is there anybody else who wants to, did you fill out a form, sir? Go right ahead. I did that just to get your name, not to say that you couldn't speak.
I am Pastor Gordon Humphrey. I'm Pastor Olivet Church in Oakland. I've been there for 29 years. And beyond the technical aspects of what I've seen on paper, this is what I can share. Being a pastor, I know that in my own community there's a distrust that exists between the community and Black African American pastors. I grew up with my own community believing that all Black preachers did was eat chicken and drive Cadillacs, and that they were pimps, and that all they wanted was the people's money, and that was the perception. Now, whether that was right or wrong, that's the perception. and perception is reality for most people. And so in order for me to be effective in West Oakland, what I had to work hard to break the perception, which means that I could not wait on the community to come to me. I had to go to the community. And I could not make the community responsible for breaking that perception. So that meant that if I operated the way that preachers have always operated, that the people would keep the same perception. I think that the struggle that we have is that there is a perception in our community that this is what I see. The community does not trust law enforcement. And the perception of the community is that law enforcement is insensitive and does not know how to respect the community. Right or wrong, if that's the perception, and perception is reality for most people, then the onus then becomes on law enforcement to break that perception. The other question I have, and I'm finished, is I'm hearing a lot of discussion about what happens after the fact, after an incident. My question is, what is going to be our response to address what happens? How do we prevent offense as opposed to punishing it or addressing it? Who's going to oversee who gets hired as well as who gets fired? What are the criteria for the kind of people that we hire? Who do we want on law enforcement? And what are the standards by which those people are hired? And what kind of diversity and cultural training are those officers required to have so that y'all get my point?
Excellent question. Excuse me, is there anyone else who would like to speak before the family speaks? Right. Who is representing the family? Right here. And I know everyone has yielded, but in the interest of everyone's time, I will grant you an extended stay, sir. Stay, sir.
I understand you got a tough job. And well, I'm Oscar's uncle, and Pastor Humphrey, thank you for that, because he really expressed what I was going to express earlier, and that's the perception. My perception, first, just of the BARC board, you don't have to take this personally, but it's the board in whole, is that your response has been so negative that for you to form a committee and say that you want to act in good faith really raise reservations. So my first question is, why did you not support AB 312? Even though I may have had some questions about AB 312, I was really concerned on your desperation to not allow that bill to go forward. Mr. Radulovich initially said he was not thrilled with this model. He hits that perception again. And I'm sure everybody felt that when you said that. Well, if you're a board member and you feel that, then how are we not to feel that same way? So you need to address that clearly. My next question is this. Do BARC truly need police officers armed? Now maybe I'm wrong, but is the New York transit system with armed police officers? If they are,
that still raises the question, do our BART system need police officers with weapons? The Berkeley Review Board made some great comments, I thought. It doesn't make sense for you, without the knowledge, to understand how a board works, even though you did invite community members to come and participate, but the reality of it is, none of you know how it truly works. What should have been done, out of all the boards, Joe, Dr. Marshall should have been a committee member, and many others from the committees themselves should have been formed and brainstormed the possibility of putting an oversight body together that they know that can truly work. Because they all bring knowledge to the committee about how the oversight board should work. So my recommendation is to rethink this process because you don't have the knowledge. We heard the community say there's no teeth in this so-called oversight model that you took a look at. But now if we think back to May 2nd, if I'm not mistaken, I'm clearly, if I recall that right, we all said we liked the San Francisco model. I know I did. I thought it had much more teeth than what I'm reading now. And if you seriously are acting in good faith, you would have heard what the community asked for. And you would have analyzed that model, and you would have brought it to the table, and you would have said, look, we got this idea, but we did hear you say this, so now we're trying to hash it out. But you didn't even bring it forth. What is the perception? I can get into the teeth of this model you presented, but I'll just cite some thoughts that I've had. Now, here's how the process works. I file a complaint. It goes into somebody's hand. Is there a timeline on that complaint? How long do the person that received the complaint has to bring back a result? Is it a year? Should this say in the document that once a complaint is filed, within 90 days, you will hear a response? And I did hear or see or heard somebody say, there's not even an appeal process to allow you to say, hold on, that decision wasn't right. And this is what I believe. As a matter of fact, I got facts to prove what I'm saying. But if this particular model, it goes into somebody's hand that says, well, sorry, doesn't make sense. Some model don't necessarily mean it's a good model. You may be acting in good faith to bring about some oversight board or an avenue for citizen complaint with good intentions. But as I see it, and the community see it, and we analyze the document, and thank you for allowing us to do that, it has no teeth. Now, Reverend Buford, said it clearly that we had to look at all these models and put together some gumbo in hopes that it works best for BART. Well, I thank you for your effort, but I don't necessarily agree with it. That's where I'm at with this. My recommendation is that it be an external agency with true knowledge, taking a look at a committee that's been formed by an oversight committee group from throughout the Bay Area, maybe the state of California, maybe even the nation that's been formed, to form this committee, and this external agency brings some brilliant legal advice, not just to the committee, but before it's even formed, that we have someone working in our behalf that has the knowledge to say, hold on. Thank you, Berkeley, because they brought knowledge. Thank you, Pastor Humphrey, because he brought knowledge from experience. We got a board sitting here that have a minute. You don't have the knowledge. So how could you pick a model? The reality of it is, you can't. You're guessing. Now to raise a question on whether you're just trying to appease us as a people. There go that perception again. Now if we're going to change perception, you're going to have to act in conjunction with the people's concern. It's been 5 months. And you haven't done anything. I mean, just recently you've taken a step. But when the public stood up, representatives from Berkeley put together this AB 312 bill, immediately you responded. Now, you responded to something that was really initially meant to be good, but yet when your own organization committed a heinous crime that we all know and witness, there was no response. That's that perception again. So now you want the community to believe that you're going to work with a good tent. If you're going to convince me, I believe the only way you can do that is to form a committee that have experience. To bring in an outside agency to bring in some great legal advice. And then present to the public what they have come up with that leaves you out of the picture, that shows us that you're going to hand this over to someone that you believe can bring peace with the people.
Mr. Johnson, unfortunately, I'm in a position of saying sometime we must, but if you would wrap it up, I would ask you to do that.
I can wrap it up. I've heard that the board took a look at all the complaints that was filed in the last 5 years and discovered that it was 12 to 20. Now, I never filed any complaints, but I can tell you that's not the real number. So if you're working with that number, you already killed the process. Because we heard about the money that's going to be involved to form this committee, but we're working with these false numbers. So therefore, with false numbers, you can't put a committee together. Because we got XX for the number of members on the committee, and we got 12 to 20 complaints per year, but that means we might just need only 5 people. Understaffed. Relook at this proposal. And think about what the community has truly said and expressed. And then maybe you can truly act in good faith and give us something in return that might generate some faith.
Thank you very much, sir. And thank all of you. I can say that is, I think I can speak, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. I think what you have said tonight is exactly what they want to hear. They wanted your feedback. In the short time I've been dealing with them, they said they wanted to hear exactly what they heard. And I they can correct me if I'm wrong, they will speak for themselves, but I really appreciate all of your comments, and I appreciate the passion especially. This is a serious matter, and you have shown that it is serious. I believe that they will take you very seriously. I will turn any final statements over to the committee. they can talk about next steps also.
Dr. Sweet,
please. I'm going back to that.
I'm a family member, and I did not get my time, and that's not fair.
Oh, before you go, I'm sorry. He had ceded all the time to Fam for Family, to Mr. Johnson.
I know, but I did not concede my time, so 3 minutes ain't much.
Okay, right ahead. Please. I'm right sorry. Ahead, we didn't mean to overlook you.
Go right ahead.
Because my God is justice. And he's already let me know my authority in him. And the real reason is that, first of all, I want to say to each and every one, it's hard for me to stand here today. Tatiana's birthday is tomorrow. And I know that we are not here for Tatiana's birthday, but in reality, we're affected by it. And for those that gave gifts and cards, we're grateful, and we want to say thank you. And I'm not standing here to beat no one today. But I am here to say that we all come to the conclusion and the realization that the sun is not shining. That's why I'm wearing my black hat today. And it won't shine for us for a long time, Bobby. But the real reason what brought us here today is Oscar Grant. We won't get justice from this panel. So let's face it, we're not going to get justice for Oscar Grant. I want the media to get a glimpse of this. You can hold this up, Troy. If I can get one of the members of the BART to just pass one of these cards to each board members, if that's okay, if Troy can pass it, it's just a card. I print this card myself. I designed this card because lynching has to stop. Lynching must stop. It has to stop. Oscar Grant was lynched. He was shot cold-blooded. Everyone that's sitting on the board, I don't care what kind of committee you put together, you cannot bring justice for Oscar Grant. But what you can do is hold the people accountable that has the position that is still sitting in the position where they could have made the first right call. They need to be held accountable for that. And the officers that have not been called to the front plate to be held accountable for the other victims that are involved and are suffering today from this, and they're not being held accountable, you still have the position to bring some kind of justice. Don't be a weak link. Please, don't be a weak link. Lynching has to stop. This is the 21st century. We have to come to a place where we can be strong individuals and come together collectively and stop the lynching of the 21st century. Sunshine will not shine for us as a family. And Tatiana is going to celebrate her birthday tomorrow with the absence and the non-presence of Oscar Grant lighting the candles for his daughter's 5th birthday. So how well of a happy birthday will that be? We can give her gifts. We can give her everything. But can we wrap her daddy up in a box and let him come out of a box to say, happy birthday, Tatiana, daddy's back? That'll never happen. So think about that. Oscar Grant was lynched. And we need to take care of some business. We can't bring justice for Oscar, but we can bring justice to start removing some people that needs to be removed.
Thank you. Any comments, and particularly about the process from here on?
Sorry, I guess I'm just thinking about Oscar's daughter now, and I'm sorry that we're even here today for this. A part of what we'd like to do now is address as many of the questions that came out of this as possible. And Ms. Blanchard, you started off the questioning today. And I did get the name right.
Yes.
No. I hope I get your question right. If we had this model in place on January 1st, what would have happened differently? And I honestly can't tell you a whole lot would have happened differently, but what I can tell you that if we did have this model in place on January 1st, there would have been a dedicated body out there overseeing everything that happened that night. That dedicated body would have been able to isolate all those officers in a way that I don't know if it happened. I mean, I don't know enough about what happened on the platform that night. We haven't gotten back the internal affairs report from that night from the Myers-Nabe law firm that we hired. But what we can say would have been different would have been having that body out there that night, having our auditor out there investigating right there on the spot that night, each and every officer. That would have been different. And I know a lot of you think that we might be trying to appease you, but I can honestly say that from my perspective, I know I'm not. This has to be something that we put together to make a difference and make a change. We can't keep sitting here talking about how do we go forward when we kill somebody. We can't. We can't kill anymore. So the one, and I'm trying to answer your question in a way that might make some sense, because having that body out there that night would have at least given us some feel for what really went on, and maybe it would have prevented what ultimately happened, and that was having the officer involved resign. We might have been able to get him to talk that night, which didn't happen. We have to come up with a way to get the police department to not oversee itself. We didn't purposely put together a bad document tonight so that you guys could kill us on it. We put together something so that we could get exactly what we got, and that is the feedback that tells us here's what we really want. And Mr. Johnson, we didn't mishear you on, I mean, we didn't mishear the crowd on May 2nd. When they asked for, they said that they loved the San Francisco model. I'm a San Franciscan, and I know how that model has been working. And there's good and bad, but a lot of it is good. And the one thing that is good about it is the strength of that citizens' review. The fact that they have the ability to tell that commission, here's what we found. The fact that you have Mr. Marshall sitting on that commission, and they can actually mete out the punishment. If there's discipline to be had, there's a body, not the bar board, not the board supervisors, not the police department. It's an independent body. So I heard nothing else tonight from everybody here is that we need an independent model. We need to come back to you with something that takes us out of that picture. And Ms. Blanchard, your question, because it was the first question, it's the one that it's probably going to stick with me because it does make a difference. We need to be able to stand up, especially when people ask us what would have been different. Whatever we come up with, we need to be able to say it would have been different had we had this in place. Right now we don't have it, and we know it. So I know we have all this stuff on the board over here and what we can go back and work with. We do have some experts on the committee, and unfortunately Don Casimir, who is the auditor investigator for Richmond, worked with us diligently, and he has been sitting there trying to get us to understand why these things are important and what needs to be in there. But the hearings, I'm sorry guys if I'm talking to you. And Casimir worked in Berkeley as well, and in Sacramento. So a lot of these models are coming in here based on things that Mr. Casimir knew. And God, I wish he'd been here tonight, because I think he would have let most of you know that we're doing what should be done based on his sound knowledge of what works and what doesn't. But we do hear, and we're not coming back without something that fits more closely what people talked about tonight. Mr. Casimir did make it clear to us that this whole hearing thing We need to have a process, some kind of appeal process, but based on the police officer's Bill of Rights, we can't hold public hearings on this stuff. It is confidential, and because it is, it puts some constraints on what we can and cannot tell people about what happened. Assembly Bill 312. First of all, it was San Francisco, Tom Amiano and Meiling Yi, both San Franciscans, who proposed this legislation, along with a San Francisco Board of Supervisor, Mr. Campos. If anybody remembers that night that it was being introduced, Director Radulovich and I were standing right there with them because we didn't understand the importance of having police oversight on BART. I'm not sure why, and I can only speak for Lynette Sweet as a BART board director who thinks that we should be supporting as a group Assembly Bill 312, even if it is prescriptive, even if it does put a lot of constraints on us. We need something in place. If that something can't be done through this committee, then it will have to be done through the state legislature. So holding these meetings and getting your input is the only way we're going to be able to do it ourselves. If we can't, 312 needs to go. I mean, it needs to go forward at a breakneck speed because there's no way we're going to be able to function without having some kind of oversight. Another one of the questions that you presented, Mr. Johnson, was why do we have an armed police force? That would have been one of my questions, too, if 9/11 hadn't happened. And if BART was not considered on the West Coast one of the top 10 terrorist targets, that puts us in a whole different frame of mind. That means that if anybody ever wanted to attack a big piece of the Bay Area, an easy way to do it is to hit 350,000 people who are riding on the BART trains. So even though it may not seem like we need a BART police department, we do. I mean, we can't say we don't. We know that we need it. And BART police don't just answer calls or car break-ins or little crimes like that. There are a lot of robberies that happen at the BART stations. And to their credit, I mean, all of our police officers are not bad people. These are some really good, hardworking folks who don't like having this scrutiny over them right now either. They don't like the perception that they're all bad guys. Men and women. Because they're not. We have had two BART police officers sitting on this committee who have been very open to making some change to the BART police force. They see the need for it and they want to do it. So to that end, Greg and Jesse, I mean, I know we've talked about you before, but they have really put in a lot of time trying to make some changes because they understand the need to do it, too. I'm trying to think of your questions off the top of my head without putting these glasses back on, but you had another question. Oh, why do we have X's in where it says how many people on the Citizens Oversight Committee? It's because we hadn't asked the community, what did you really want? In our head, we thought, you know it has to be diverse. We know we have to look at all three counties. We know that the other BART directors who are not sitting here are going to want to have some input in it, but the bottom line is we don't have a number in mind yet. We looked at what was going on in some of the other agencies, but BART covers four counties. We may need to have more than 7, more than 9, more than 11. We may need to have 20-some-odd people, but I welcome that because you won't get everybody coming to the meeting, so if you get enough citizens paying attention. The other thing that you mentioned is Johnson's teeth. And the one thing that I think those of us sitting on the committee knew before we came here tonight was that it didn't have any teeth. I shared with you before the meeting started, look at the citizens' piece, because I knew that's where we were totally deficient. We're going to have to go back to the drawing board and put some teeth on that. We're trying to work within all of the groups that have a stake in this, meaning the Police Officers' Bill of Rights, all of those laws that are out there, but the bottom line is The teeth have to be there for this to make a difference. And I just want you all to know that you were heard loud and clear tonight. There was so much that we got out of this. And actually, I wanted to answer your question as well. Excuse me. Mr. Sturdivant? You were probably the hardest on us, but you were supposed to be. And all I have next to it is that, listen, because you were telling, can you just tell me what your question was again? Because I know it had something to do with the accountability piece, the teeth, and making this a lot stronger. You told us we didn't have enough there. And there is no there yet. But I think if you give us some time to try to do it, it's been 5 months. And you're right, it has been far too long, but we're getting there. Did you write down Mr. Sturdivant's question? Oh, yeah, I did. That's why I had this here to listen, because there are so many rules and regulations that govern police officers and their employment and what we can do. As a manager before, I knew that if I fired somebody, everything left. You took whatever retirement you had accumulated, and that went with you, but you were gone. Police officers have a whole different set of rules that surround them. And we can't change it at BART because they're mandated to stay. I mean, we have our police force, but there are the police officers' bill of rights that our state of California rule. We have to go by that. I mean, we just have to. You guys can tell me to be quiet anytime you want.
That's right. You can jump in anytime, Tom.
No, he's next.
Right.
He's next.
I didn't answer my question about why there are so many armed police officers.
Well, I'm going to punt that one over to the general manager, because I too had, we just went through yesterday our whole budget discussion and where we are and what we're doing. So for me, and looking at fiduciary responsibility and looking at the number of officers here, it may be a little, I guess we just didn't know what the crowd was going to be and who was going to, it's a lack of knowledge. So maybe going forward we can tone it down a bit, but I will let Dorothy Duggar explain why we have so many here tonight.
I think Director Swain, you answered it correctly. It's a little uncertainty about the size of the crowd, the number of public who might show up. We've had some recent meetings, excuse me, in our board meetings where we have had more than standing room only, overflow crowds, and including a couple of meetings where, frankly, I don't think we did our job in running a running an effective meeting that ensured the public, every member of the public's ability to participate, or our responsibility to ensure the safety of the public. And as a result of a couple of those meetings and one particular meeting got pretty outside the bounds of normal meeting behavior, We have tightened up our rules on the conduct of public meeting and have a obligation to provide for the safety of the public who attends. And frankly, we just didn't know on a Friday night how many people would show up. And we've always sort of managed these meetings with the direction to the police to make the call, and if we get into the meeting and we're well within the fire code on crowd and numbers and so forth, that we try to step back down. But it's out of a sense of not knowing what to expect in terms of ensuring the orderly conduct for everyone's benefit who's here. And I appreciate the appearance or concern that looks like it outnumbers the audience, and I think we're trying to be mindful and sensitive to that, both from a fiduciary responsibility as well as the environment in the room that we're trying to create.
And I'm going to pass this down because I know other directors want to talk, but Mr. White and Ms. Kidd coming over from Berkeley, I do want to say thank you for doing that. Ms. Kidd, you told us something here tonight that I just wanted to ask you a question about. You said that you get to recommend. And I just wanted to find out how often are your recommendations taken verbatim, meaning if your committee or your police review committee makes a recommendation, especially a disciplinary recommendation, how often is that followed to the letter? Because that's kind of where I'm, if we do go that route and we have a group making recommendations, I want to make sure we're modeling after something that really works.
Can we talk about that afterwards? Because what we do in the situation, we go through the policy.
Okay.
In essence, we create a subcommittee to look at the policy for that allegation.
Okay. I thought I understood that your commission did not make recommendations on discipline.
We don't make recommendations.
No. Oh, I thought you said during the hearing process that your committee can make the recommendations.
Not about disciplinary action.
Policy.
Just on policy. Okay.
But you do have subpoena power, am I correct?
We do have subpoena power, yes.
That's critical. Don't you think that's critical?
Yes. Critical. And actually, Oscar Reitman, well, I think Mr. Wright may be gone, but he did put that out as something that we needed to do. So on that note, thank you all for the questions. Thank you for the very first question that actually set the tone for where we're going to go. And I'm speaking to you again, this one, because it did put that thought in my head, and I think it gave everyone else here a chance to say exactly what they felt about this document because you opened the door, so thank you.
Director Sweet, may I ask, or is anyone else?
Yeah,
all
right. Director Regula, the chair.
All right.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you all for coming out tonight, and just telling you a little bit about what I heard and actually responding to and hopefully answering some of the questions that I heard tonight. I guess just in general, in terms of AB 312, as Lynette said, we were there. We were at the press conference with Senator Yee, with Assemblyman Almiano, and with Supervisor Campos, who we met with today, and actually reviewed this. And he had some great and very enlightening comments. But so we believe in civilian review. We believe there's a role for the state in defining it. But I also believe that it'll be good for BART, and it'll be good for the community to go through this process. You know, BART is always telling or being told, in my mind, and the idea of us working with the community to devise something that works for us and works for the community is something we need to be doing more often. I've always been a believer in community involvement in BART matters. You know, we've done very community-based processes around planning at BART, and I think what we're doing right now, although frustrating, for a lot of people, including sometimes us, is important. We need to be able to, as an agency, go to the community and dialogue with them and not always tell or be told. So thank you for being a part of this. I think, as Lynette said, if we don't get this done, the legislature, even PORAC, and you know, it wasn't BART that bottled that up, it was PORAC, the State Police Review, or State Police Association. They said, look, we can't stop the legislature forever. You, BART, are going to have to come up with something. It's got to feel legitimate. And if it doesn't, then the state will tell us exactly what to do. And we all know that. So what we're hoping to do, though, is give ourselves a chance, give you all a chance to let us know what you need in this model and get it right. And if we don't get it right, the state will tell us. And we're clear about that. Let's see, what else? On that question of how would the incident have been treated differently, well, a few things. One, and it's called out very specifically in this, and something we learned from Sacramento was an investigator from this independent auditor would have been present that night on the platform, obviously not when the shooting occurred, but as soon as there was a notification, that auditor would have been there. So a lot of these questions that have been swirling around about, you know, witnesses and about crime scene and how it was secured and all of that, that investigator would have been on it from that moment. They would have been watching and hopefully asking questions of the officers. All of the officers would have been debriefed that night. So it would have been a very, very different investigation because of the sort of proactive way we have hoped, we've defined here for them. I think hopefully there would also have been a role in prevention. One question was, do you have to be just reactive, or is there a role in prevention? And I think a few things about that. One is, and the ways in which the civilian review can strengthen that preventive. One is kind of a proactive look at policies, procedures, etc. So we want this body not just to investigate incidents, but we want them to make recommendations about police training, about hiring, about policies, procedures, etc. So if there was anything that we could have done as an agency in those areas that could have prevented this, well, this body might have caught that. And that might be something that is different here. We've talked about crime analysis, really looking at patterns of behavior. And this was something Don Casimir said when they looked, his auditor looked at incidents for police officers. Well, they found that younger rookie officers accounted for a lot of the incidents. So they recommended as a policy measure, well, you need additional mentoring training. So that's another preventive way. Joe, I was talking with David Campos today. There's an early intervention process that OCC is doing. So officers who are getting in trouble for minor infractions, well, they intervene with those officers very early before that escalates. And that's something that I hope this body can do.
To correct you, it's not the OCC that does this. That's a process that San Francisco put in place. Mm-hmm. It's an internal process that is monitored by a department themselves for professional development rather than a punitive process that looks like it's beginning to bear some fruit.
But I think that there's a lot of programs out there that are preventive, and I think that those are things we want to integrate into this model for civilian review, but also into BART's own practices. I heard a lot of comments saying that there needs to be a much stronger role for the citizen body, and to that I say amen. I heard, about officers who retire to opt out. Well, you know, we need to find out what the legal limits are that we can do to that. I would presume in any case the investigation would go on. And even if the officer is no longer the employee of BART, we absolutely have to conduct an independent investigation for a few reasons. One is we want to establish justice. What happened? Now, the consequences for that officer, they're no longer an employee. You know, we can't take away retirement because that's, according to under state law, that's your money, right? That's money we take out of your paycheck and goes to you. But so the consequences they face might be criminal or civil through the courts. But as an agency, we are absolutely obligated that even if an officer is no longer an employee, what happened? And then going to the route of, is there anything we could have done to prevent this and make those changes? So at least in everything we could do to keep the investigation going and come to those conclusions would happen with BART. We can't do anything that's, of course, unlawful. Let's see. Complete police complaints we need to do better, and we have done better, I think, since the first of the year in making it really, really clear how to file a complaint. This model would be you would not be filing your complaint with a police officer. They would all go to civilians working for this independent auditor. All complaints would go to them. And then those would be given to Internal Affairs or else directly investigated. But so you're always filing a complaint with a civilian. That's going to be the major difference between what's proposed here and the way it is now. All right, well, let me finish and then you can correct me. okay. All right, so Joe, you asked a lot of questions, and I'm going to respond to them. I think I responded to some of them. One is, you know, does BART need armed police officers? Yes, we need a police presence at BART. There needs to be law enforcement at BART. Does BART need to have its own police force? Maybe, maybe not. That's a question, actually, we've asked Noble, who are this National Association of Black Law Enforcement Executives, to look at. Should BART have a police force? And if not, you know, who should police BART? Now, you know, we could contract with other police forces to do the work that the BART police now do. I think there's an accountability issue there. You know, so your contract police officer shoots somebody. Well, how do we as a board know what happened? How do we as a board hold those police accountable, et cetera? It's a contract. So that's something I'm worried about. I think the current system we have here is unaccountable, and I think we can make it accountable. I think having no police force for BART is going into a different direction of unaccountability, and I would rather focus on making our system accountable. Let's see here. I think your idea that we need to be reviewing the proposal for the review board with people who've been on review boards is an excellent idea, and I think one of the follow-up steps for us would be to get, actually, at least the two of you, and I'm volunteering you right now. Some of the people that we had on the panel, Supervisor Campos, Joe, whatever, get a bunch of you together. I'd like you to look over this proposal, and I'd like to spend, you know, a lot of hours with you discussing it with one another and you discussing it with us, because I think that would be tremendously helpful in terms of ironing out a role for the civilians, the appointed board that is, in my mind, not advisory, but that is a direct and an integral role in this. But what that role should be. So that's certainly a follow-up step that I am going to advocate for. Let's see, a time limit on complaints is an excellent idea. So how long? One thing that I wanted to point out, though, and I think that anyone involved in these civilian oversight models know, justice may be done, but it is not swift. There has been a terrific amount of impatience with the pace of the BART investigation and things, and you know, whether or not that's merited, I don't know, because I'm not an expert in how long investigations should take. Correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but sometimes getting a case all the way through the hearing process with these civilian review bodies can take a very, very long time. So
I said that when I was here, that was one of the drawbacks, and that when you get into the legal system, there are there is a way, I think, to balance that out, though, without being able to talk to you.
Yeah. So, the, you know, if people want swiftness, timeliness, the auditor model may work better. But if people are willing to wait, I think involving the civilian review body can be, you know, in the end, I think, more effective. I think it can be feel more authentic. But quickness is not it's not a virtue, I think, of any of the civilian review models we've looked at. It's a group of volunteers. You know, these are people who volunteer their time. They're, you know, sort of like us. They're not necessarily all experts, they're not there all day. So the scheduling them, you know, having them do the hearings, having them involved in a more direct way is going to be, you know, a time-consuming matter. So we need to balance that. If people want investigations to be swift and done, anyhow, my call for a different model. Let's see. I think that is, staffing, you know, we didn't address staffing directly in terms of a specific proposal. I don't know what I wanted to talk about. But some of it depends on what we ask this body to do. So obviously you have my commitment as a director, and I think everyone's commitment that this will be adequately staffed. We know that that has been a drawback to other models, that they've all felt at times that they've been under-resourced. So you have my commitment that whatever it is we decide to do, we'll provide all the staffing so that they can do their jobs, you know, both the investigation, proactive, the policy recommendations, the gathering information, and doing the direct investigations. Lastly, it was representation on this board or on this committee. And, you know, one idea is that it be diverse demographically. We also heard that it be diverse geographically. And so one proposal I would just throw out to all of you, I was whispering this to Director Keller, was, you know, maybe each of the BART directors nominate somebody from their district. We all represent a specific geographic district on the board. So it's, you know, three counties. We all represent one-ninth of the three counties in terms of population. So each of us could nominate somebody. The board as a whole could confirm those folks. And then if they turned out to be wackadoos or whatever, we could remove them for cause if they weren't doing their job, weren't showing up, whatever. Wackadoos term. Anyway, it happens. But that would be an idea that we would each appoint somebody. Then you'd get the different points of view we have on the board. We have geographic representation. But I also want to make sure, you know, we could, you know, end up individually, if we did it all in isolation, end up appointing a board, maybe by accident, but that wasn't demographically representative. So what I wanted to do is get all the nominations together and say, oh, are we missing youth? Are we missing women? Are we missing some community that we haven't got? So each of us nominate, we look at all the applicants together, and then we would confirm them. So that's just one proposal, and I actually love people's reaction to, does that make sense? Does having the board as a whole, you know, pick five, seven, whoever, however many people, make sense? Should we do an open application process, which we could do even if the board members nominate? You know, we could have an application. If you live in BART District 9, for example, you would apply. I would look at all those applications and say, I want to forward these ones to the full board with recommendation or not. So help us think about how we get the diversity we want on that board, both geographically and demographically. And I'd love your comments and responses on the things that I put back. But once again, thank you. You know, we had the meeting on the 2nd. It was a very emotional meeting, intense, and some people came prepared to talk about civilian review, and some people didn't. But I just wanted to thank everyone for all their comments about civilian review and what we ought to be doing, because I think it's given us a tremendous amount of food for thought. We hope we'll bring you back a proposal that's going to address your concerns much more directly. Thank you.
Thanks, Director Radulovich. You know, as you were speaking, I was thinking we kind of have that appointment process. We've done that fairly successfully with the oversight for this, for the seismic. Yeah, it's kind of a process that we have some experience with. I want to join Director Sweet and Director Radulovich. We will close with the Chair's comments in just a moment, but I want to join the two of them in thanking everyone who came forward and speaking, particularly the members of the committee who put in a lot of time and effort. It's clear we have some work to do, some continuing work, and the comments that were heard this evening will help us shape something that makes sense for BART and for the community. And we may end up with something that is not totally what everyone wants to see, but it will be in place. There's a commitment on the part of the board that we, if we put something in place, whatever it is, whatever it looks like, it will be examined at the end of the year, and we have the authority and responsibility at that point maybe to make some significant changes. So I want to keep at it, and I particularly want to thank the family members who spoke. Their comments were heard, and we are serious about wanting to do something that isn't window dressing. We want to make sure it's significant, and these kinds of things don't happen again. I think both Director Sweet and Radulovich talked about what difference would if we had this in place, what difference would it make? And I think that's really what we have, what has to be a guiding philosophy for us, because we don't want to respond to incidents. We want to spend some time and energy preventing incidents. The model is, that came before us today, it was highlighted that this auditor would be called out to the scene, so there would be an independent person at the scene of this type of incident. 3 o'clock in the morning, that person gets a call, they respond to this, to the incident. It's not that different than what the district attorney's investigator does in an officer-related shooting. They come out to the scene and they're responsible for being there. I think Director Radulovich talked about the value of a citizen advisory committee that can look at policies, procedures, and best practices. So if there is a trend of an officer doing something that's inappropriate, we can act either through training or discipline to try to change that conduct so it doesn't escalate to a serious incident. So I just want to be sure that everyone understands that at least this director, and it sounds like all of us, have heard very clearly what's been said this evening. There are lots of different points of view, and there are lots of different ways to do this. We're hopeful that whatever is finally adopted by the board can get buy-in, maybe skeptical buy-in, but get buy-in, and then we can try to make it work and improve police practices here at the district. Before I turn it over to the chair of this committee, Carol Ward Allen, I want to be sure you all understand that everything that was taken down this evening will be referred back to the committee. You'll have an opportunity to go over that. We will continue to inform the community about those discussions. And at some point, this matter will go to the BART board for consideration. It may mean that we need additional public input. May mean we get the input at the BART board. I'm not going to prescribe what the ultimate outcome is going to be, because I think facts will drive a lot of that. But certainly, you'll have additional opportunity to tell us if we've made changes, if they're bad or good, whether they need to address your concerns, whether it's we're headed in the right direction. And on behalf of the board, I just want to thank everyone who participated this evening, and your input and ideas were respected and appreciated. Let me turn it to our chair for final comments.
Well, I had an opportunity to welcome you all here, and I certainly want to thank you all for coming. We appreciate all your comments. We thank the Oscar Grant family for all of your comments. It's important that we hear what your concerns are, because we want to address them. We want to thank all of the community that came out tonight. You're what it's all about. We want to thank Joe Marshall very much. Definitely as you may know, this was a subcommittee of the committee that I, you know, the overall committee, and the purpose was to make sure that we include all the directors in it and give everybody an opportunity to share the vision, to share everything that we need to do. And I want to thank Director Sweet and Director Radulovich for being involved on this committee, along with Minister Keith Mohammed, Reverend Buford, Reggie Lyles, both of the BART union representatives. Our purpose was to have everybody at the table because, you know, if you leave one link out, you might have a problem in not getting what we want. So we did have gumbo. We had a gumbo. And I think that you have too much of any one and not enough of the other, you don't get a good gumbo. So I just say, just add lots of shrimp and chicken, okay? But overall, I think that that was something that we wanted to do. And we had a lot of staff support in this, and I want to thank all of them very much for doing it. I believe very strongly that we have to include youth on this, I think that we have to hear what they have to say. And I personally would like to have two representatives from each district, from each district representative, and, you know, that would be fine. But we know that we had more to do, and we certainly knew that when we came here, we said, let's present this and see what happens. In creating any model, and one of the formulas I use is one called SAFI. And SAFI is you state the problem, you analyze it, you formulate your plan, you implement it, and then you evaluate. And you can't evaluate enough. And that may be quarterly. It certainly has, in my opinion, has to be at least yearly. And then you may have to change it after 1 or 2 years. You know, you find something wrong, you say, okay, that didn't work. So we know we're going to make mistakes, and we know that we're going to have to add and subtract and so forth, and that's our goal. So that's what we're trying to do. I certainly advocate more training. Some people say, is there a need for the BART police? I say, yes, but there's also a need for improved training. And so I certainly think more diversity training is important. I'm one that feels that they even need a little bit of history, and I teach Black history, so sometimes we have to know the history. As Oscar Wright said, when did the police come on in Oakland? I remember a time when in Oakland that Asians were considered too short and they couldn't be hired for that reason. I mean, all these little reasons that people put out why we can't do what we need to do. So we definitely want to have all of that there. And so that's what I'm looking forward to. I think the next time you meet us and see us, you'll be happy with what we're trying to do. I think it'll be an improved plan, and that's what we're looking for. But again, thank you so very much for coming out. Happy birthday, Tatiana, and thank you all for being here this evening.
And Carol, can I say one?
Yes.
And I don't mean to take the last word. I was just thinking, though, as you were speaking, our committee meetings are not private meetings.
Yes.
Which means that if anyone wants to provide input while we're taking this stuff back in, trying to put it together, feel free to come. We normally meet on Monday mornings at 10 a.m. We're not meeting this coming Monday. Actually, we're not meeting next week at all, and I know we won't be meeting on Memorial Day, so I'm sure we're going to pick a day during that week, but it'll be on our website. I think we have most of your email addresses, so we'll let you know, but it's not closed. So feel free to come and provide input, because you know what? Next time we come here, we want you to say, this is what it is. This is what we like. This is what we want you to do. And as Dr. Keller said, we may not be able to please everybody, but if we put some teeth behind the citizens piece of this, if that citizens piece has some power, it may be exactly what we're looking for. And I see another member of the public. I'm sorry, member of the family.
Yeah.
Oh, he was waving at me.
Oh, okay.
They're bonding.
It's a male thing.
Do feel free, and especially to the Oscar Grant family. I know that this is all raw, this is still hard to do, but if you guys want to send family members to sit in and tell us where we're going wrong, please do.
Actually, family members came and helped select our committee.
Yes,
they
did.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. So I want you to know that.
And Marx.
Well, Marx was there, but I'm just welcoming everybody, because the more we get, the more input we get, it will be the kind of review committee that we can all stand up and say, this is what we want.
And may I say something? The minute we opened it up and said everybody could come, we had less people. So I just want, you know, I just want to say, so please, please do come, definitely.
I just... Gonna, at risk of sounding like a total policy nerd here, Reggie actually straightened me out on what I had said that actually wasn't in here. I had said that all complaints would be received by a civilian. That actually isn't a proposal here. It's something that I had advocated for. It's not in this proposal. So if you all think that's something that should happen, we'd like to hear from you in terms of, you know, should police officers take complaints? This should all the complaints be taken by a civilian review board or both? And if a police officer takes a complaint, should they be obligated to turn it over to the civilian review board within a certain time limit, 48 hours? That is in here. But the idea that they that the civilian review body does take all the complaints is not in here. So I'm sorry for misspeaking, and good night.